You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 263. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, out of Philadelphia, no longer sitting in front of a Panera Bread, or at least apparently, Mr. John Gentile.
Adam, I haven't been in a Panera Bread in about 3 to 4 weeks, mind you. Now I'm at Burger King.
Are you hungry? Are you not eating? Are you sick?
I'm just not jacking their Wi-Fi like a creepster anymore, and the employees like staring at me as they walk out of the place to go home for the evening.
Did you give anyone like that slight nod where you're like I'm robbing this place as soon as you guys go? But then they're all like, we work for a fast food restaurant, so we don't fucking care.
Well, there was the one time where the lady was like arranging the chairs, and we just happened to be talking about Kim Fowley raping people, and I was talking, and it was super awkward because it looked like I was talking into my computer about Kim Fowley raping people at 10 p.m. at night.
Like an audio journal.
Yeah. It was awkward, Adam. It was awkward. But life is awkward. That's what life's all about. Awkwardness, destruction, conflict. That's life, baby.
That voice that you heard was Mr. Tom Crandall in Grand Rapids. Tom, you haven't been on the show since 250, apparently. The big anniversary something or other.
No, I've been shut out. I'm glad to be back, guys. To talk about mayhem and destruction. John, you're such a nihilist.
Well, I guess if you gotta choose between the Sex Pistols and the Clash, these days I'm choosing the Sex Pistols.
What about the Germs? The Germs. They were the king of the nihilists.
That's true.
John, speaking of nihilism, we got mail.
We got mail. All right, we got a fair amount of mail. You can always use it at podcast@punknews.org. And I've been sitting on this since like October, I think. This is from Shu, and here's what she says. Tom is the best. He tells it like it is. And that's from Shu.
Really? Thank you, Shu. By the way, I sent that email, and I'm Shu. But sorry, that was a segue. Forget it.
Here's one addressed to me, well, generally to me. Tell John G to stop playing hipster bullshit. Punk is a genre. If you start to call anything punk, then the word punk means nothing. How are two fashion models that look like Nelson punk? That is bullshit. Punk means three chords and the truth. Punk is a genre, period. And that's from 30M Dog.
Oh, is this about the garden?
It's about the garden, yeah.
Now, when he says look like Nelson, like like Nelson Muntz?
No,
like,
who's Nelson? He means the glam metal band that was two brothers called Nelson.
It was the kids of Ricky Nelson, the old like TV star. They were really bad. They had really long hair. Yeah, they were one-hit wonders. What was their one hit? Boy, that was my era too, but... Even I was like, screw these guys.
This band looks amazing. I've never heard of this before.
Really? You guys are missing out. If you were 10 years older, you'd remember like me.
Nelson's pretty bad.
They were. They made Winger look like death metal. Did you hear that? They made Winger look like death metal.
Well, hold on. We'll fuck whatever we were going to talk about. We'll talk about Nelson.
Talk about Nelson.
Their number one hit was Can't Live Without You, Love and Affection.
Yeah.
I don't recall what that song sounds like. 1990. And yeah, this band had amazing hair, but there's a picture of them on the Wikipedia page in 2007.
Ooh, and they
look like they're in the Goo Goo Dolls now. Mm. Don't you think the Black Veil Brides will look like that eventually too? Oh, this is fascinating.
They still look identical, though. Like, sometimes identical twins don't look so identical when they get older. They still look, like, exactly like each other.
Like one of them starts to, like, get all monstery or something? Like, what does that mean? Like, stop looking identical. Like, one of them's been in a horrible disfiguring
Usually
accident.
One will get fatter than the other.
No, Adam. What I'm saying is that as people grow, their bone structure, their skin, their musculature is affected by many things, including diet, including atmosphere, including life. And sometimes,
man,
What's that?
So one of them was going to like Elephant Man on them.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying they both still look, you know, like fashion models. So good for Nelson. I mean, I don't like their music, but I don't wish any ill of Nelson. Unlike Adam White, who is hoping to get something, some kind of monstrous disease or something.
It's great because if you Google image search Nelson Band, you just have this mix of this Nelson Band and Willie Nelson.
Oh, I would think you get Nelson Muntz from The Simpsons. Willie Nelson?
No, none.
Anyway, so if you want to Google Nelson on your own and look at pictures of Nelson, you can do that on your own time. Here's one last letter from Jason. He writes in a fair amount. I like Jason. Jason, I think, is commenting on us talking about Brett Garrowitz signing actually The Garden, now that I think about it, but also like a lot of these screamo emo bands. This is what Jason says. And Adam, I'm interested on your take on this. One thing I've noticed about Brett Garrowitz is that he likes all of Nicki Minaj's photos on Instagram.
That's it.
It's stalkerish.
Oh, no. Jason's
that's
cool,
whole,
man.
That's the whole mail.
No. I mean, don't make fun of it. Jason's a nice guy. He was on the Punk's Point a couple of times, once or twice. Jason's a good guy. He's just saying that he's trying to examine. Like, the question is, we are mystified by Mr. Brett's signing choices. So we're trying to take him apart to see if we can really understand what's going on with these unusual signing choices. And Jason Bierstein is saying that he likes Nicki Minaj's photos, which I find amusing. I find it amusing that every single post that Nicki Minaj puts up, Mr. Brett like clicks like on. You know what I mean? I enjoy that fact, Jason.
That's certainly an interesting fact. I don't know what I don't know how I'm supposed to process that information. I don't know what like what that adds to the overall psychological profile of Mr. Brett that I built up over the years. That's sort of an outlying piece of data. I don't know.
Well,
what am I supposed to do? Is that a good thing?
That he likes Nicki. I mean, I like Nicki Minaj, but I don't like every single one of her photos.
Actually, but should
I've never liked a Nicki Minaj photo. I mean, I like some of the photos.
But think about it here. Mr. Brett, right? Long-running punk rock band, beat a horrible, horrible drug addiction problem, runs a big record label that employs a bunch of people, and then you, who hangs out in front of a Panera Bread and talks about horrible things. It seems like what he's doing is working.
So I should like more Nicki Minaj photos. That'll be my way to success.
At the very least.
I'll get started on that right away. But here's how not to achieve success. At Punk News, we do 4 reviews a day. You all know that. Well, a while ago, I got an email from a band. I probably shouldn't say their name. I mean, I don't think we should spank them too bad. Adam, Tom, should we spank them or not spank them?
Leave them alone.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, say I never heard of them. I doubt most people will, but.
So we get an email from this band. They say, will you review our record? Meaning, will one of the reviewers. So I send out to the reviewer crew. I say, who wants to review this band? Connor said he would review it. Now, Connor is definitely one of our better reviewers, but I think Connor is more of a critic. And here's what I mean by that. And actually, I mean, maybe that's why he's one of the better writers. I mean, when I do a review, I generally only review bands that I either like or younger bands. If I review a younger band, like, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 kids, I'm not going to smack them too hard. You know, I'll say, listen, they're off to a good start. They need to improve. Here's where they can improve. But they have potential. That's essentially John saying, this band is not that great, but who knows in the future. And honestly, a true critic would not do that. A true critic would say, this is crappy. You know, give them 3 out of 10 or something like that. True?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, well, you know, punk rock world's a little bit different. You know, and the fact of the matter is, if it was like a band that I thought were good guys and their album was bad, I just wouldn't do it.
Right. Me too. I agree. I'm not looking to make any, especially younger guys, younger people, men and women.
But by the same token, you don't want to ruin your credibility by saying this is a great record. Then they put the freaking SoundCloud up there and it sounds like crap.
Well, that's true. And you can't only give out good reviews. So it's a difficult situation.
Yeah.
I generally only review stuff I generally like or don't want to smack around. Connor, on the other hand, who is one of the better writers, Connor is a very fair critic in that he gives good reviews, he gives bad reviews. when he gives bad reviews, he gives fair bad reviews. Connor's given some pretty bad reviews, but it's never been a slam. He's always been able to stand behind his position, and it doesn't seem as if it comes from a personal place. You understand what I'm saying, guys?
Mm-hmm.
So he reviewed this band, and basically what he gave him a bad review, he said, what they're doing, they do it okay, but it's not original and it's been done better by other bands. And he wasn't mean, he wasn't cruel, and he wasn't personal. He basically gave a fair assessment of his opinion. He didn't like the record. So I felt bad for the band, but what can you do? They asked us to review it. We didn't ask them to review it. You know what I mean? And so then about a couple of days later, I get an email from – no, I'm sorry. I get another submission of that same album. And it's weird because this is an unknown band, right? And I'm like, what are the odds that two people review this band? One person I don't even know. I click on the person's name. They haven't ever reviewed anything else at Punk News ever before. The review is a 7 out of 10. It's a generally positive review, but it has some negative points. Basically, I wish the production was better. So, honestly, my bullshit detector went off, you know, because the review didn't talk bad about the actual substance, only that they, quote, didn't have enough money, essentially, to record it. But, you know, I'm not interested. I don't want to censor people, so I sent this reviewer an email, and I said, thanks for submitting the review. Can you confirm that you're not affiliated with the band in any way? You're not in the band, or you're not in the band's PR, and you're not friends with the band. Thanks. Then the writer writes back, hi, I am a fan of the band, having seen a few of their shows before they released their album. I actually have a CD copy of the album I reviewed. They had posted the link to another review on Punk News on their Facebook page. I thought I'd give them a second opinion. I hope that's not an issue. Signed, Kevin. And one of the things we do at Punk News that not a lot of other websites do is we do what's called counter reviews. Like if somebody gets a bad review and someone else turns in a good review, then we'll run the good review too, in addition to the bad review. If somebody turns in a good review and then someone else turns in a negative review, we'll run them both. So then I said, that's cool. I'll run this on Friday. I just had to make sure there was no funny business. Thanks for submitting. And then right as I was about to submit it, my bullshit detector was still going off. And right when I was about to submit it, I go back to look at the email. And and you know how if you email somebody and they email you back, it will say their actual name in the email when it returns it back to you? You guys know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Adam White?
Yeah.
Okay.
Email.
So I get the email back, and I notice that even though the email is signed Kevin, the name on the email is the vocalist from the band. And so I said, hey, Kevin, I just realized that your name comes up as XYZ. XYZ is the vocalist and guitarist in the band. Did you lie to me? And I know he's lying at this point. And then here's his response back to me. Hi, John. No, but you caught me guilty of spoofing my email from to mess with the guy who runs the band's fan club. I forgot that I had done that the night before I sent you an email. Anyway, I guess that really doesn't do much for my trustworthiness, so if you want to scrap the review, I understand totally. Signed, Kevin. And then I was nasty, and then I felt bad about it. So first I said, give it up, that's pathetic. But then I felt bad, because that's kind of mean. So then I sent another email back, I put, on second thought, if you really are who you say you are, I apologize for the curtness. I still can't run your review as you understand. If you are the band, this is not the way to go about getting good press. Instead of submitting fake reviews, reach out and ask the publication to post a video or a song or something like that. I realize that getting a bad review is a real bummer, but this is not the way to go about getting positive press. And then he said, hi, John, no problem. Like I said, I understand under the premise of suspicion. Just do me a favor and don't tell the band that I spoofed the singer's email. I hate to have a band I like mad at me. It was done as a prank. Signed, Kevin. And so, first of all, guys, do you believe this guy? Is this real? Second, and then actually in the comments section, I caught some flack. I decided to give the band a light spanking, and I didn't name the band. But I said, listen, don't submit your own reviews. We're probably going to find it out. And then people gave me flack. They're like, John, you should just run your review anyway, even though the band wrote their own review. So here's the question. Should we run reviews written by bands? I got to say no, but – I mean, I don't know why people were attacking me. I thought that was insane. B, do you think this was the band or is this just some maniac?
Wow. Okay.
And then Adam, stupid? Am I am I really dumb that A, I fell for this prank to begin with? And then B, I sort of had to give him the benefit of the doubt that he actually was spoofing somebody's email?
I can't imagine why anyone in the comments – well, okay, I can of course imagine why people in the comment section would be mad at you, because they're mad at you for everything. But I don't understand the argument of you should just run it anyways. I mean, there's lots of places on the internet where you can just post anything and it will be there. And then people just have to kind of deal with it. I mean, that's those things exist. That's you know, your Reddits and your Tumblrs and your whatever else and your Twitters and whatever else, right? Like, there's lots of places where everything will be there. The whole point of Punk News existing is that someone is taking all of the everything that's getting fire hosed at us and making some sort of decision about what of it we're going to kind of collect and showcase. So that's weird. But coming back to this guy's thing about that he was spoofing the email of the singer of the band
the night before he decided to submit a review.
Yeah, I mean, so on the one hand, saying, yeah, you know what, I'm a fan of this band, I've seen them live a couple times and I bought their CD, and clearly I follow their Facebook page because I saw that they posted the negative review. Like, all right, like, that's all plausible. But also, the night before, I was pretending to be their lead singer is super weird. So, I mean, if that's true, you at that point can't be angry. You just have to kind of throw up your hands and go like, I'm a weird dude and I was in a weird dude situation. And this is what happens to us weird dudes when we try this weird shit. Sometimes it comes back to burn things. So, yeah.
Yeah, John, you were right. You were right to. I don't think you need a super finely tuned bullshit detector to pick that up. I think.
Yeah, but I almost fell for it. I was like, "Are you in the band or anything?" It's like, "No." I was like, "Sounds good to me."
Well, you know, it's like your mother always told you. You know, when you make a lie, it's always more complicated because you have to remember all your other lies you told before it. If you just tell the truth, you don't have to. This guy, this is an after school special waiting to happen, man. This guy's a dumbass. Here's the line that John read that gave it away that it was a false review. Not since the first Ramones LP has an album so shaken the very foundations of rock and roll. That was the line that gave it away.
That's weird.
Good stuff.
Yeah, don't do that, fans. I mean, ooh, that's problematic for all sorts of reasons.
Well, I'm glad there's some sanity in this house. Like, people were saying, John, you should have ran that review, you asshole. And I felt like the only sane person in an asylum. And after a while, you start to think, am I the crazy one? You know? Like I was stymied that people were like, John, you're an asshole. You should just run that review anyways. And, like, anyways, let's talk about a band that never wrote their own reviews. Let's talk about DOA. This was quite an honor for Punk News. We premiered a brand new DOA track at Punk News. It's called Punk Rock Hero, quite fittingly. Of course, you know, DOA is one of the most legendary Canadian punk bands ever. They've got a new album coming out this Friday. It's got a Bob Dylan homage in the title called Hard Rain Falling. This is the first single, or maybe not the first. This is a single off the album, debuted at Punk News. This is called Punk Rock Hero by DOA. New album out the time you hear this. Oh, on Son of Death Records.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Pretty far.
He's a punk rock hero.
Throw a bottle out.
way, that was DOA with Punk Rock Hero. It is always cool to hear the new DOA for some reason. I hear a lot of stuff from like old punk bands that comes out, and I'm not just playing my Canadian card here, but DOA never sounds, they never sound old in the same way that other bands sound old. Like there's something about like Joe Keithley that just like, or Keithley that just like, it calcifies into this snarkier, angrier, almost like more juvenile, but in a good way, person. And it feels that like, if you go back and listen to like early DOA stuff, it's sort of like, it's mad and it's political and it's of the time. And then you listen to modern day DOA stuff and it just seems to have like this snarky punk rock lifer thing cranked way up, and it is unlike any other old band of that age. It's like they're not trying to like exude like an amount of like gravitas or an amount of like wisdom. Like, we're gonna talk about Bad Religion in a minute. Like, you listen to like stuff from like Bad Religion these days, and like they're really trying to sound on their records, you know, like they are not, like, well, they're A, that they're not a nostalgia act, but B, that they are, you know, making very, very, very contemporary music, I think, even though it still sounds like Bad Religion, but there's always been that kind of aspect to it. But like, you listen to DOA and they're almost like gleefully embracing this like woo punk rock thing in a way that's sort of charming and sort of weird. And I don't know, it's new DOA is so interesting to me.
They're also live. I saw them about a year ago.
I'm never sure, like, yeah, like, I'm never even sure if I really like the new DOA stuff. Like, not in that it's bad, but, like, I listen to it, and I'm like, wow, this totally sounds like DOA in, like, in, like, the most amazing way. And then I don't know if I'm going to come back to this in the same way that I would, like, come back and listen to, you know, I don't know, stuff something off of Hardcore 81 or something like that, right? But on the other hand, I listen to it and I'm like, they're still going. Like, they don't sound tired, you know, so I'll give them that. So, yeah, new DOA is a treat. That was rambly. Sorry.
Well, I saw DOA about a year ago. They kicked ass. DOA still kicks ass live, man. Great band live. Great band.
Same here, John. They're really good. They're kind of like almost like the punk rock AC/DC, you know?
Yeah,
they sort of
yeah,
make the
true.
Same record over and over again, but they're pretty consistently good.
Yeah,
except for I buy DOA albums and I don't buy AC/DC albums. But other than that, it's the same.
I would say DOA's later years are better than AC/DC's later years in contrast to their former material.
I think Nelson's early years are better than AC/DC's later years, but, you know, that's always up for debate.
Well, speaking of Nelson, we're going to talk about Fest. So, we're in the season now. We're new bands. The Fest bands have, I think, mostly been announced at this point, but we're still getting, you know, lots of little acts and, you know, that people that weren't on the initial kind of headliners lists that are starting to kind of fill in the cracks. And this is always where you get the really interesting stuff that shows up playing Fest. So, or really, let's say the unexpected stuff. So, so here's a bunch of new Fest bands that are playing. And we've got the Gametes. I'm never sure if that was the Gametes or the Gametes, but I heard someone say them once.
I think it's
Gametes. I thought it was Gametes, but someone said it and it was like Gametes. And I was
well,
like, fuck,
that?
Really?
Just some kid or like a person?
I feel like it was Scott Heisel at one point. I'm not sure. What do you guys? Do you want to vote on this? Gametes or Gametes?
I'm saying Gametes. That's my
I'm vote. Saying Gametes, too. Gametes is too pretentious.
I prefer to say Gametes. I mean, Gametes sounds weird, but it's just like that.
I think Gamete would have an E in it. Gamite.
Or an X.
I'm just going with what had been done, with how I've been ruined by someone about this. Anyways.
Listen, Scott Heisel right. said that Ron Reyes was not a good singer, and so I think you lose all credibility right there. So.
I don't remember if it was Scott. I don't want to blame him. Anyways, whatever. The fucking Gametes are playing. Joey Cape, the lead singer of Lagwagon, the So-So Glows, Dave Dondero, Strange Wilds, Bob Nana of Braid? Braid?
I think that's him. Yeah.
Braid. See, look, I know emo. Ha. Deforesters, which is a punk rock band from Toronto. Options, the Record Collection. The Penske File, which are sort of buddies of mine from Southern Ontario down here, Hamilton, Burlington area. Who else? We got Joliet, Sammy H. Stevens, Mike Lalerna, Cut It Out, Wilderness Dream, which is all in caps, so I'm going to say it that way. I don't know why they get to be all in caps. Scavuzzo's The Hard Luck Society, Greg Ruckus, Boyfriend Material, Waylon Thornton and the Heavy Hands, Jesse Labordis, Thin Skins, Blood on the Harp, Waxwings, The Yams, and is it Kicks?
Kicks!
Kicks! Kicks! Sure. Kicks. It's like K-I-I-K-S exclamation mark. Let me talk about grammar, John, because anyways, Fast Forward
Team takes place. There was a pretty good 80s band called Kicks also, K-I-X.
Or was that K-I-X-X?
No, well, was it K-I-X-X? They were an AC/DC ripoff band, for the record. But anyway, sorry, go ahead, Ed.
I'm glad I don't know about these things. Fast Forward Team takes place on October 30th through to November 1st of 2015. Of course, down in Gainesville, Florida, Punk News is a sponsor, as we tend to be. Previously announced acts playing Fest this year include Lagwagon, Despresidios, The Menzingers, Mustard Plug, Kepi Ghouli, Chumped, Nightbirds, and probably like 600 others. So, you know, Fest is a good time. There's always cool bands playing Fest. Anything pop up that... And you guys want to comment about? Well, I mean, the fest lineups are always it's so massive and it's such a crazy week that you could go have really your own experience and it may not be anything like what someone else is doing. So, you know, it's one of those things.
What I would say is, hey, Nightbirds, man, now is the time to see Nightbirds. New record coming out. Now is the time. Kepi Ghouli's always – I don't know if he's going to be Kepi Electric or Kepi Acoustic. If it's Kepi Electric, you got to see that. But listen, Punk News is a sponsor like Adam White said. We've got a lot of cool content coming out. We've got some cool essays. We've got some cool articles. We've got some cool interviews coming out. If there's something you want to see Punk News cover Fest-wise before Fest, send us an email and we'll probably do it. We've got a big plate out there for Fest this year. And so I'm excited to really amp up the coverage on Fest this year.
I love the Fest lineup because it is, you know, if you went and, you know, ran some sort of query that told you all of the bands that Punk News had talked about in a year, a good portion of them would be on this, you know, playing this thing. I'm just scrolling through it, like the Copyrights, Crusades, Brutal Youth, Andrew WK.
That'll be a show to hit up, man. Andrew WK.
Yeah, I mean, just like everybody plays this thing. And, you know, of course you get your good mix of like those kind of like those No Idea, you know, really, I guess, Orgcore as a Religion sort of bands. You get your Gator Faces playing this thing. There's, I think, pretty sure, you know, Joe Sib is playing this. I'm just reading bands off this list now at this point. So, but yeah, anyways.
Jeff Rosenstock, longtime Punk News favorite, will be there. Let's see.
Oh, Mike Yerg, I speak in a longtime Punk News favorite.
Mike Yerg.
So there's lots of everybody playing this sucker. I mean, and a lot of bands that I don't that maybe don't necessarily tour a lot outside of the areas which they live anymore. So you know, I mean, does Nothington really do any touring at this point?
I don't know.
Yeah, so, I mean, hey, you want to go see Nothington, go to Fest. You know, you want to see cool upcoming bands like Pup. You want to see classic Gainesville bands like Radon, right? Like, anyways, everyone should go to Fest.
The Gametes will be there, the Gametes.
The Gametes?
listen, Adam, is Pup still up and coming, or has Pup came? Are they here?
Yeah, Pup are here. Everyone loves Pup. Go see Pup.
They only have one LP.
Mean Gene is going to be there. Mass Intruder.
Toys That Kill, Teenage Bottle Rocket, Underground Railroad, The Candyland, which is a great band.
Off With Their Heads, another Punk News favorite. Pairs, another Punk News favorite.
Have either of you guys ever been down there?
I've been once, once ever. And it was Fest number, I don't know. It was a few years ago, pre having children, when I could just, you know, when I could go do such a thing. There was a lot of the Punk News crew who were, you know, kind of like our longtime writers and stuff that were down there that kind of got together. So like Justin August used to be one of our longtime writers. Brian Yancey was Mr. Brian Schultz down there maybe. And then we had, you know, Akira Wisniewski was there with us. And then we had a bunch of our new at the time Punk News writers. You had guys like Matt Mondo that had started writing for us, Katie Hardy that was writing for us at the time. So we had a good little crew that was down there, and we actually had some merch made last minute, but we had, like the usual stickers and stuff like that, but we had Night Owl, which is a merch company, make us, we had t-shirts that said Punk News, Stranger, Slower, Older on them. We had koozies, we had like bottle cap opener things. Maybe other stuff that I'm blanking on at the moment, but during the fest load in that year, we actually set up like a little table, like a trade show table thing in the fest registration line, and just like gave out Punk News swag to people, which was great. We may have sold Punk News swag too. I don't quite remember. It's a little bit of a blur, but fest was amazing. And there were a lot of like weird fest moments that I super cherish, because I don't know where else these kind of things would happen to me. And the one that's popping into my head right now was that. So Florida is weird in that, like, your ability to get liquor on a Sunday night is really diminished.
It's the South, man.
And at one point we're walking around after seeing the bands that we wanted to see, and the nights, you know, the band attending part of the night has kind of died down, but we're all still kind of like amped up to go do something. And we're wandering down the streets of Gainesville, which are getting more and more deserted. And then these guys come up behind us and they're just like, "Do you guys know we can get any liquor?" And we turn around and it's Youth Brigade. We're like, "We have no idea." And we're standing around with Youth Brigade being like, "Man, there's no booze."
I would give them my liquor if I had some.
So I don't know. Fest was great. This was, I mean, John, this probably won't be of super interest to you, but there was, this was the big initial Restorations love in at this one, where they were still pretty much like a Philly kind of phenomenon, where they hadn't really gotten out to the rest of the punk community in the way that they have right now. And they played this one show that was on that Sunday night in a tiny little venue that was just packed with people. Like, we saw it basically like sitting on top of a cabinet or something in the corner of the room, because there was nowhere to get anywhere. And just the entire room was just going crazy for it. And there was just like an amazing vibe. And like if I think back, like that was the big like Restorations coming out, it felt like. So anyways, Fest was awesome. I wish I could go to Fest every year.
That sounds great, Adam. A bunch of people, you know, relaxed and hugged each other. The Dwarfs came out and destroyed the place and ended their set in 12 minutes. Let's talk about Greg Graff. And go to Fest, kids. It'll be a good time. Let's
talk about Fest, yeah.
Greg Graff and, you know, Bad Religion, Dr. Greg, everybody knows him. He's going to be releasing a new book called Population Wars on September 15th. Population Wars is basically, I think, his theory on overpopulation, I think. Anyways, he's also putting out an acoustic 7-inch, because as we all know, all scientific dissertations are more convincing when you have an acoustic 7-inch with them. You can listen to one of the tracks called Faith Alone. Tom Trauma, did you dig Faith Alone by Greg Graff, and are you excited for this book?
You know, so I caught the two-night Bad Religion set in Chicago, which was pretty cool, because they played 80 to 2000 one night, and then 2000 the present the next night, and it was pretty awesome. So I'm a pretty big fan. I kind of had my fanboy geek moment this year watching them, and I remember him talking about the book, and I thought to myself, boy, I should get that book. And then I totally forgot about it until I saw this story again. As far as the song, it's okay. He doesn't really do a whole lot with it, quite frankly. I like the song. I like the original version of the song. The most interesting thing about it is this sort of like second chimey guitar that comes in during the chorus. Other than that, it's just, you know, it's fine. I mean, I'd listen to it.
He sounds a little bit raspy, eh?
Well, you know,
you get a little rasp. He's no spring chicken. I don't know if that's an age.
You know why? You know, yeah. Well, and there's no electric guitar to cover it up.
Well, no, but so I'm a big fan of Dr. Gregg's here solo record that he put out in 2006, which was called Cold as the Clay. And on that record, so he had a bunch of original stuff that he had done, but he also covered a whole handful of traditional Americana folk stuff, really old timey folk songs, things like Little Sadie and Willie Moore, Omi Wise, those kind of things. But anyways, so that one, he didn't sound as raspy as he sounds on this cover, which is not a bad thing. It's just 2006 was, I guess, 10 years ago, more or less, right? So, there's some agedness coming into Gregg's voice, which is interesting.
Do you think it's a manufactured rasp?
I don't know. I probably not. I mean, what's he have to gain from manufacturing a sound at this point?
He's got Armstrong.
400 Bad Religion albums under his belt. Everyone knows what he sounds like, so there's no changing that up.
Was his solo album acoustic based, or was it more electric?
It was acoustic, but it was acoustic in a. It wasn't necessarily one guy in a guitar, revival show acoustic. It was really more roots instrumentation sort of thing. So, there's a lot of piano on it. There's people playing slide guitar and banjo and fiddle and whatever else. Like, it's a full band. It's Gregg Graffin and a bunch of the guys from the Weaker Thens, and then a bunch of folk musicians that are actually putting all the instrumentation together on it. So it's a fairly lush thing at times. It's not coffee shop folk or anything like that. This is actually more that style. But anyways, he's put out his acoustic stuff so infrequently. I mean, before Cold of the Clay, they had his first solo record was called American Legion, and it came out in 1997. So, every 10 years or so, Gregg goes and does something or other. But yeah, so I think he sounds kind of raspy on this. But hey, it's cool. I've never read any of Gregg's academic work. Or his publications or anything like that. And I feel that I should, because so much of my who I became from a political standpoint as a teenager was directly as a result of listening to Bad Religion.
Is he respected in the academia world? Do other academics see him as an academic, or do other academics see him as, the guy in a rock band that wants to be a teacher now?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that community at all. I imagine that he probably outside of touring to people that know him from being someone that teaches classes and lectures and stuff like that. Like, that's the normal Gregg Graffin to them. He's the guy that has office hours at 4 p.m. every Thursday, and he comes in and he teaches us, and he wears a tie.
But what
or something like that.
In academia, certain professors, when they publish a paper, it's a big deal, Do you think his papers being published have resulted in commentary and criticisms?
I don't know.
I couldn't answer that. Yeah, I have no idea.
It's such a foreign world that's.
But this book is a fictional. I think this is a fictional book, right? This is a storybook.
No, I don't think so. I think it's I think it's a scientific thesis. I think. Let me look it up.
I didn't get that impression. I thought it was a fictional book.
What was his last book? It was called Anarchy Evolution.
Yeah,
Anarchy Evolution was absolutely nonfiction. It was.
Maybe I'm wrong.
In the book, Graffin argues that this use of evolutionary theory is wrong, and that the mistake has allowed us to justify wars, even when other less violent solutions may be available. So it sounds like his thesis that basically war and conflict is the result of Darwinism, or however you want to put it, is a flawed thesis.
Yeah. This is the kind of stuff that he lectures about and that he teaches about and that he specializes in. Yeah, it would be really interesting to see just to kind of see what the reaction would be, to see kind of an academic review of some some Greg Raffin stuff and not something by like a Bad Religion fan.
Not just like some dumbasses like us trying to read this and interpret it.
You know how in academia, like sometimes the professors get really goofy and like they develop like wars against each other, or like some professors hate each other, so they constantly criticize each other. What if we did like a very negative academic criticism of Graffin's book just to like put it up on Punk News? Like, what if we did that? What if we?
Go ahead, I feel you go ahead. That
the shtick that you're trying to do there would either not land or would go completely over everyone's head, and they would just have another reason to crucify you. And you don't want to give people more reasons to crucify you, John.
Do you think Graffin would get it, and then he and I would become best friends because only he and I get the joke that I've created? Tom Trauma, play a tune, man.
I don't even know where to go with that.
Smooth segue. All right, so for those of you who don't know, there's actually a shocking amount of good bands playing in the Detroit area right now. I want to play a song from a band called Against the Grain. They just put out their new album, Road Warriors, at the end of July. And even the name of the album is sort of pays tribute to the fact that they spend literally like half the year on tour. And they start
a tribute to the fact that Detroit is like a hellish Mad Max.
They just want to get out of there for 6 months.
Just want to get out of there for six months a year.
Anyway, what was it? You ruined my train of thought, Adam. Thank you.
Ha!
So their new album is called Road Warriors. It just came out at the end of July. They're a real cool band. They started out originally playing just blazing fast. This is their fourth album. It's still got some fast stuff on it, but it also kind of has some more bluesy 70s stoner stuff, which they had even in their early days also. But anyway, the track I'm going to play is called Till We Die. It starts out really fast, and then it goes into the kind of the cool dual lead guitar thing that they're headed towards now. So anyway, this is Against the Grain, Till We Die.
Against the Grain doing Till We Die. Tom Trauma, what label is that? Self-Destructo Records?
Self-Destructo.
And there you go. Road Warriors. Speaking of Road Warriors, there was recently a video posted online by a band called Monin. And you say, who's this band Monin? What's the big deal with them? Well, it was the final show thrown by the promoter called Sell Out all the way up in Guelph, Ontario, where Adam White used to hang out, used to go to the record stores, used to go to concerts, used to ride around on his moped. Adam White, what did the Sell Out promoter mean to you? What are some of those concerts you saw down there? Do you have any perspective on life now that such an important part of your life has folded up and gone away, gone the way of the dinosaur, gone the way of the Cecil the Lion, thanks to some asshole dentist?
That was the weirdest intro to any. I don't even know. Okay, so yeah, so this video, it's a video. If you want to go check it out, it's on Punk News. It's of Monin playing the song "Passing of America," which was off their much beloved 2001. I think it was their debut, but maybe it wasn't. Called "The Theory of Hormonal Value." Monin is a band that I really care nothing about, John, and I don't really know much about, and are one of those bands that is much beloved in the Ontario music scene by people that are younger than me, but I was simply too old for. But that said, this footage comes from the final Sellout show. So who was Sellout? Sellout was a production company that was booking shows in Guelph, Ontario, at the same time when I was going to school in Guelph, Ontario. And they were really the first promoter that I ever had sort of a long-term relationship with, as far as like not a personal relationship, but like they booked the shows and I went to their shows, and if they weren't booking shows, then I didn't have a show to go to, that kind of relationship. Not a naked one. But anyways, so Sellout booked the shows in Guelph, and Guelph is a cool little university town that's in Ontario here, but it's not a big town, and it's not on the normal kind of touring route. I mean, bands when they're doing tours, they'll come and they might play Buffalo, and then from Buffalo go up and play Toronto, and then from Toronto to Montreal, or they'll come up the other way and play like Detroit and then maybe London, Ontario, and then Toronto. But you know, if you're in one of these small little towns, you don't necessarily get a whole ton of shows unless you have someone like Sellout that's there, you know, making it happen. So Jay Cloth, the guy that was running Sellout at the time, like he was the man. And like I remember the Money Green Sellout website was like the main website that I went to outside of Punk News back in like the early 2000s, because that I had to go there to find out who was coming to town, who was playing. Like when I first got into my first university dorm there at the University of Guelph, I was like, you know, we moved in September. There was posters on the wall for, hey, come down to the Trasheteria, which was the punk rock club at the time in Guelph. And, you know, I forget who was playing the first show the first week I was there. I think Grade was playing. And Grade, again, like as a band that I'm not really all that fond of, but hey, it was a punk rock show that I could go to, and that was amazing. And there was stuff that Sellout was booking that were, when I think back to it, really incredible. But back before anyone cared who, say, like, you know, Rise Against was in the mainstream, and they were just a band releasing stuff on Fat, Sellout had Rise Against up there, you know, talking about DOA, like, you know, bands like DOA would come through and play shows. The big one for me is that Sellout had an amazing relationship with the Slackers, New York's, you know, kind of trad ska band. And there was two or three years where, and I want to say it was, if it was not New Year's Eve, it was in and around like that week, where like every year there was a huge blowout Slackers show, if not a couple nights of huge blowout Slackers shows down at the Trasheteria that were just amazing, just incredibly packed. You know, way too many people shoved into this kind of tiny little scuzzy punk rock venue, you know, getting down to this amazing ska band. And I'm just like, I'm not like there would be shows there where, where Dave Hilliard, who is the sax player, and a few of the other horn players would like disappear during their set, kind of like wander down the alley next to the trash while playing their instruments, come back in the front door and just walk back through the crowd back up to the stage and things like that. Like there was all kinds of like it was such a great little small venue for doing weird shit like that. And there were so many bands that I, you know, made me who I am that I got to see at the Trash. And without someone like Jay out there doing that, that would not have happened. And that's what happens, I think, in a lot of, at least up here in Ontario, in a lot of small towns, that's kind of the way that it rolls around here, is that like you may have the occasional kind of house show or something like that in town, but if you actually want to see like a decent amount of music and you don't want to drive a couple hours to go to one of the big cities, it takes kind of like the blood and sweat of like, you know, one guy saying like, you know what, I'm going to make this happen. And those people build scenes. So I have a huge amount of respect for what Jay was doing. And you know, this video from a band that I don't really care about gave me a chance to go out and say that publicly on Punk News. And I felt really good about that. So, yeah, that's where I am.
Do you think Trashateria is an homage to New York City's famous Danceateria?
It may have been. I'm so bummed that place isn't there anymore. It it was weird because like when I left school, like when I finished university and moved out of town, it was like the Trash, like at the same time got, I don't know if it got sold to someone or whatever, but like they changed the name of it and it got really lame and then no one went there and then they weren't booking shows. And then it's never the same. You can't. I'm so bummed that place isn't there anymore.
You can't.
And it was such a horrible bar too, right? Like it was one of those like to me it was, that was my CBGBs, right? Where people that like went to CBs would have been like, yeah, that's where we went and saw all the bands. But it was kind of gross, and you could get like shitty beer there, and it was disgusting. But that was where all of our bands played, and that's why we loved it. It's that kind of relationship where I'm like, you know, like I would never go into the Trash for like a drink if there was not a band playing. I would not go hang out there if like I had not reason to be in there. But man, that was where you went. That was where the bands are playing. So.
Well, another piece of Adam's childhood folds up and goes away. A piece
like leaves falling off a tree.
That's a lovely tribute though, Adam.
But let's talk about something that's eternal. Something that will always be there, always has been, and always will be. Let's talk about Glenn Danzig. Glenn Danzig is
going. So I'm getting old, but we're going to talk about Glenn Danzig.
Listen, Adam, I saw him in October, and he kicked ass. He wasn't like the Trashateria folding up and closing because they can't make rent. He kicked ass, and he's kicking ass still, and here's why he's still kicking ass. Glenn Danzig is going to be on Portlandia. He's going to star with Carrie Brownstein of Sleater-Kinney and as well as Fred Armisen of Saturday Night Live and some old punk rock bands. And we don't know what the show is going to be, but it's probably going to be have something to do with beach goths or something, because there's a picture of Fred Armisen. And I don't – is that Carrie Brownstein in the picture? I don't think that's her. Maybe it is.
Yeah, it is. Oh. She's got a significant amount of wig on.
Yeah, on the beach – in goth getup, and the best part is Danzig's got on the swim trunks, but also like battle boots, which is hilarious. So listen, hey, I feel this is important because you know Glenn Danzig is often criticized for being humorless, but quite clearly here he is displaying humor towards who he is. Agree or disagree?
Oh, absolutely. And that picture.
I imagine that classic. Glenn's got to be like one of these people that you know. He will make fun of himself if you are paying the proper amount of deference to who he is,
and you're not just like saying the proper amount of dollars.
No. Indeed, like, you're right.
Like, you've got to imagine that, like they approach him and they're like, you know, and they're saying, Glenn, we are huge fans of you. You know, we love what you're doing. Come be goofy with us and be on the beach. I imagine at that point, Glenn's gonna be like, you know what, I'm gonna do that. And then that you contrast that with like some kids on the internet being, hey Glenn, remember when you bought kitty litter? We're gonna make fun of you on Tumblr. I can imagine him not wanting to participate in that aspect, you know?
Adam, I think you cracked the code. I think you exactly cracked the code. I think you know the key to Danzig's heart.
Well, just yeah, he he can have, you can have fun with Danzig, but don't disrespect him.
Yeah, you're right. As long as you acknowledge his great achievements, he's willing to have fun. You know what I mean?
Hmm. I don't think people want him to be lighthearted. He's supposed to be like the Prince of Darkness.
But... True. I think he kind of is the Prince of Darkness. I think Danzig's awesome. Although, like I said, he is surprisingly pale for being a Paizan.
Yeah.
Well, he is Danzig, right? Like, that's his. He's got to be pale.
That's true. You can't have a tan Danzig.
You know, Danzig is not what he once was. You know, he always swore for years and years he'd never play those Misfits songs. But now I think he's going, well, I got to fatten up that 401k a little bit. I'll play some Misfits songs. Maybe I need to go on Portlandia, get hip with the younger, you know, the younger kids.
I think you're being cynical, Tom. I think he's playing Misfits tunes because he loves those songs and because the fans want to hear it. I mean, Danzig.
He didn't love them for 30 years and now he loves them again?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's human.
I don't know. He always totally separated himself from all that stuff, and he never wanted anything to do with it. I mean,
he's selling the same amount of tickets, you know.
That being said, John, I've seen Danzig probably at least 10 times, and every time he comes around, I pay the money to go see him. So,
I think you're being a little cynical, Tom. I think Danzig is just being a cool dude. I mean, why would he do a Samhain tour? You know, I mean, because that's what the fans want, and he enjoys that music, you know. I'm back in the zig.
I'm gonna go ahead and say that it's financially driven, but hey,
I don't think so.
You could put, yeah.
Adam White, we'll give you the deciding vote. Is Danzig being on Portlandia and performing Misfits tunes financially driven, or artistically driven, or a combo?
Well, you gave him an escape route. You gave him the combo route.
Yeah, Nick's combo. You cannot answer combo. That is off.
I can't
the
answer combo. Okay. I'm going to go with to be Glenn Danzig and to do everything that Glenn Danzig has done. Everything Glenn Danzig has ever done, no matter how serious it's been, has been inherently goofy on some level. Like, his entire thing is kind of goofy. And you can't have made a career of being Glenn Danzig without having some sense of the entertainment value of what you're doing. So I've got to imagine that he's doing these things because it's meeting that criteria and that it is entertaining to him to do it. Not necessarily that, like, they've given him $50,000 to appear on.
Bam! I'll take it.
We're going to have to agree to disagree, Adam. That's all right. Listen, like I said, nobody's given Danzig more money over the years than I have. I think I literally have everything he ever did, even those sucky classical albums that he made on the cheesy synthesizer.
Yeah, they're all right. I don't hate those albums.
they're not very good. But hey, like I said, different strokes, John. Different strokes.
That's true.
So that's our Danzig story there. is there anything else you guys want to talk about, or should I play another song and we'll get the hell out of here? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I always love bullshit, honestly, but I don't know if I really have anything that pressing aside from kids reviewing their own albums. Danzig's the man.
If Danzig wanted to review his own album, we would certainly let him, just for the record.
Right? No, I wouldn't, but I would do an interview with him. Honestly, I would never let anybody review their own record. I would let someone post, like, information about the record, like, oh, here's what this song means, or here's how I came to this song. But, I mean, and honestly, like, punk news is not CNN, punk news is not whatever, but I think we do have an inherent ethics code that we at least try to abide by, you know what I mean? Like,
okay, here, do you want to talk, I'll tell a little story before I play my last song about one time when that ethics code went right out the window, and I benefited from it financially.
Can't wait.
At one point, we get contacted by this company called Sumo that makes these beanbag chairs, right? And they're like, Adam, we want to send you this, like, I don't know what the fuck the thing costs. Like, we're going to send you this $200 beanbag chair. Adam, Can you review it?
You sold out for a beanbag chair?
No,
a $200 beanbag chair. I mean, it's like a sack full of beans.
Hold on. You don't get, hold on. These things... What's on? Let me find out the.
Tom, these are really good chairs.
Yeah, I guess.
No, okay. First of all, let's see. What did he say? $149. Okay, they cost more than a few bucks, right? So they send this thing, right? Hold on, they sell chairs that are like $400 or $500. Fuck. Okay. Anyways,
It's got so magic
this
beans.
Box, this box shows up at my house. This box is, let's say, a 2 foot square, right? I bring it inside. This is when I'm living in university, by the way. So this is completely inconvenient for me. So I bring this two foot square box inside and I open it up and this beanbag chair has been like vacuum sealed into this 2 foot box, but the thing grows and expands and it is literally a like 8 foot sphere at this point. Like it is enormous. It is bigger than the couch that we had. It's just like the biggest fucking thing ever. And it's filled with like, it wasn't filled with beans. It was filled with like little like shredded foam. So you could suck all the air out of it and it would get really small. And this thing is gigantic and it's amazing. Partly because it's gigantic. It was like someone had shipped me Jabba the Hutt. Like it's that big. And so they sent me this gigantic chair and I'm like, so I got to review this thing now that they've sent me because they sent it to me. And I'm like, how do you review a fucking chair? Right. And like, where do I put this? Like, I didn't feel right putting it in the Punk News reviews section. So I think on Navel Gazing or one of those like articles that we post like periodically about bullshit on Punk News, it was just like, okay, here's the thing. And below this article is Adam's review of this big bananas chair that they sent me, right? And it's in there. It's in the Punk News archive somewhere.
What year is this?
I don't know. It's in our archives. You can find it. Use the search. It's if you search for sumo beanbag. It's not showing up.
Sold out for something easy on your ass, Adam.
So hold on. So here's the monkey's paw part of this conversation, right? So I get this gigantic thing that can never be put back into what it came from because it's enormous. And then I have it. Then I have to like move and go to another city and, live my life and bring my possessions with me when I go from place to place. And this giant fucking chair just keeps having to be transported. And like, if you were to put it in the back of a pickup truck, it is the only thing that could go in the back of the truck. Like it's that big. And it was a burden. It was like the rock Sisyphus was pushing up the hill, right? This chair that was just following me around. And then at one point a couple years ago, when we had this enormous chair and we were going to have my first kid had not yet been born, but they were on the way, and it became evident then that we're like we have to get rid of this chair. Like it's taking up the child's room. This is where a child has to live. They can't live on this beanbag chair. And I had this employee at the time who I no longer have, and it's kind of like I showed up at the office one day and I was like, hey, you're kind of a weird dude that would benefit from having a giant beanbag chair in their life. Do you want a giant beanbag chair? And you could like tell their eyes lit up and they were like, yes, I absolutely want a giant beanbag chair. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, you're probably going to sit on this thing and play like fucking, I don't know, Xbox, whatever kids do these days all day long, aren't you? And you could tell that he was just like, yes, that's all I do. And I'm like, good. Cause here we go. I'll bring
this,
it.
And this like, is your severance package.
We showed up at his house, giant beanbag chair, brought it in, shoved it up like three flights of stairs, probably tearing the paint off the wall because the hallway was much narrower than the size of the chair, deposited it into that guy's house, and then took the fuck off so it couldn't follow us. And I'm sure that when that guy had to move out of that house, he's cursing me. So there you go.
If you want to read Adam's review, it's September 21st, 2008. Punk News article.
Did you find it?
I did.
Find it.
How did I find
what's,
it?
There's this what's thing the
called,
article called?
There's this thing called Google, Adam, and it's pretty handy. If you want to find something on the internet, you can just type in attributes about the article and it'll show up. It's pretty cool.
What's the article called? What's the headline?
It's Sunday edition, September 21st, 2008. I'll read it for you guys. The Sultan model sumo sack has been something of a sideshow at my home in recent weeks. Family members have dropped in to witness it, to awe and gaze and paw at it like apes in a Kubrickian obelisk. Make no mistake, this is a massive piece of furniture and takes up more room than its amorphous profile suggests. However, the greatest compliment I could pay is that we so enjoy its presence that we've rearranged an entire room to accommodate it. Lesser furnishings were cast out to make room. Praise must also fall to Sumo Shipping Department, as the chair arrived in a box less than half its size. The shredded urethane foam had been compressed to an astonishing degree and contained within a cardboard box, its corners rounded from the pressure. Rolling the item into our home and watching the sack expand like some Brobdingnagian mushroom was a wonder. Given the eventual girth of the contents, this was a feast in of itself. The sack is satisfyingly massive, and it invites its passenger to attack it. We found that throwing oneself into the item often results in the most pleasing grooves. The micro suede cover is particularly inviting and has so far held up well. The durable blob of a seat promises to be a central part of my furniture writing process and looks particularly well suited to record reviewing. Highly recommend it if you have the room.
Boom!
Well, I'm sold.
You should go buy one. I wonder what these fuckers cost. It was a Sultan model. Let's see.
I don't really have an 8-foot.
I don't know if they wanted this press. This chair is $250.
Mm. Adam, why did they ask you to review it? Like, what does this have to do with punk rock?
I don't know. I mean, I don't. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed having it while I had it. I mean, don't get me wrong. The review was genuine, I guess. But like, I don't know. Like, no one ever sends us shit review. Like, no one ever like gets in touch and is like, "Hey, Punk News, do you want to review some, you know, this set of, you know, Jamie Oliver brand pots and pans?" Like, those kind of things don't happen. So I don't know how we got on someone's chair radar.
Yeah, I mean, I had to beg and plead just to get some hot sauce.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I know a lot of the bands do like hot sauce, barbecue sauce, Punk News, or Tom Trauma, care of punknews.com. Sorry, go ahead.
So anyways, that was
I'll eat anything.
That was a story about a big chair that I got and then became a burden. Yeah. Here's a song from Metz. It's called The Swimmer. We'll be right back. was a song from Mets. I just bought their new LP. It's called Mets 2. It's really great. It's on Sub Pop. You should get it. It's got a nice kind of gatefold LP that it comes in, too. It's a really sharp package. Everybody knows Mets because they're great. So that's our show for today. If you want to email us, it's podcast@punknews.org. Please don't send us any more furniture. I'm not at the point in my life where I can deal with that anymore unless you guys want some.
And don't try to review your own records.
No. So anyways, I think that's it. That was a weird show, guys. Weird show.
Weird, man.
That's all right. Weird is good.
All right, cool. That was fun.